call from mom. Answer it. Call silence.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thank you. Gentlemen and guns coming.
Hey, guys. Brand new podcast. On Wednesday, as promised, they come out every single Wednesday. I am burning, man. I am so happy with this podcast lately. I'm very proud of the hard work I've put into it. I'm sick. We're renovating. The house is an absolute mess. They just tore down the girls' room today. And I'm going to be posting a vlog about it. The vlog is coming back. I'm going to be posting them, trying to find an easier system than the one I got going on right now. Shit, that's not what I meant to do. I meant to look up my tour dates. I know I'm in Syracuse. I'm in Syracuse. God damn. My brain has stopped working, I feel like. The older I get. Tom Segura and I were going to be on AJ Hawk's podcast coming up. Take a look for that. Fucking getting down to the nitty-gritty, a pro athlete telling us his real opinion. And once he sees us face-to-face, like side-by-side, if Tom hasn't minimized his screen, he's going to know. Syracuse Funny Bone, August 4th, 5th, and 6th. Stand Up Live, August 11th, 12th, and 13th. The Oddball Festival with Tommy Buns himself. The 25th in West Palm, the 26th in Tampa, the 27th in Atlanta. I'm not on all of them, but Tom Segura is on every single one of them. I think you should head out. It's great fucking lineups. And then I'm in the Toledo Funny Bone September 9th, 10th, and 11th. September 17th, 18th, and 20th. Oddball again. The 20th ending at Red Rocks. That is my last oddball date. I was supposed to do 7. One fell out. I don't know if I'm going to replace it or not. But that was the first thing Bun said to me when I talked to him when we talked about doing the oddball. He's like, dude, we're performing at Red Rocks. Holy shit, man. That is a big fucking deal. I'm so excited. I haven't drank in a while, so that's what's going on. I think I'm detoxing. Calling Sick to Work show in Tampa with Cowhead, my buddy. I have a feeling Ralphie's going to be there. I don't know. I haven't had a firm confirmation on him. On the 23rd of September, it's going to be at the Tampa Improv. I will go in. I will do Cowhead. I will drink. I will do Cowhead. I will drink from 6 to 10. And then we'll go straight to the club at 12 o'clock, do a show, buy your tickets. It will sell out because that next day we leave on the Cowhead Cruise. God damn it. The Mike Calta Cruise, 24th through the 1st of October. Philadelphia Helium, Comics Comedy Club, Gotham Comedy. My hour special will be coming out right around that time on Showtime in October. I don't know when exactly, but it won't be Halloween, and it may be the week before. I don't really certainly know, but I will tell you when, as soon as I know. Dayton, Baltimore, Tampa, Morty's, Fort Lauderdale. I'm touring hard as shit. Oh, New Year's Eve, I am at the new club. I forgot. So that's it. Those are all my tour dates. If you get a chance, do me a solid. Go to TomSegura.com and get a Thomas Fat shirt. Wear it to my show. Wear it to his show. Take a picture. Send it to me. I also have new shirts that I'll be revealing very soon. You might have seen them on my Periscope. And that's it. I'm a multimedia man until the end of this year. And then I'm going to reassess my life. But the podcast isn't going anywhere. I'm really loving this podcast. And today's episode is a perfect example of why. Today's episode is with Miss Pat. I don't know if you know Miss Pat. She's one of the most downloaded podcasts that any of us have ever had. She is absolutely a one of a kind. And we just ended up bullshitting. We hung out in Montreal, and we just ended up bullshitting up front. I mean, we're talking about the roast battle. I was so impressed with the roast battle this year. If you want to, we talk about roast battle, and roast battle is so much of a fun live show to see. It's a great show on TV on Comedy Central. Jeff Ross. Moses, I should have complimented Moses, but I go through and I compliment everyone. I didn't spend too much time on Tony and Sarah because they're so fucking amazing across the board. But I, you know, just went through, and then it just flipped. This conversation flipped into what people need to have more conversations like this. Miss Pat started talking about Black Lives Matters, basically, because she has a son who's 14. And it was a great. It is a great conversation about race. It is very candid. We are both flawed. We say things to each other because we're friends that maybe we wouldn't say at a dinner table full of strangers. So remember that when you're listening to this. We didn't. We were just talking in my man cave. We didn't plan on 100,000 people listening to it the very next day and throwing their two cents in. So she says some volatile things. I say some volatile things. We hug at the end. And it's great. It's a great fucking conversation. I absolutely love Miss Pat. And I can't wait to see more of her on the big screen and on the small screen and hear her more on podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, oh, Birth Conqueror is on Tuesday nights on Travel Channel at 8 p.m. So TiVo it, throw it up online, fucking share it with your friends, watch it live. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, one of my very good friends, Miss Pat.
This is
all right. Now that we told all our secrets, that's the best part of podcasting. That's why podcasting was so good when it started, is that we didn't know people were listening. And so we just would talk. Uh-huh. Like when I first started doing podcasts, we would talk so much shit about comics. I mean, just like I ruined more relationships by just trashing people. Just not caring, but just not like not knowing that
many people would listen.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, I mean, there were people that heard things I don't even remember saying. I was like, "What? I said that? I was pretty fucked up." Well, yeah, we're recording. Yeah,
that just happened to me. I was on Joe Rogan podcast, and I talked about my brother being a horrible mechanic.
Yeah.
And so my brother liked to tell everybody, Miss Pat is my sister. Miss Pat is my sister. Well, one of his clients looked me up and said, dude, your sister on here saying you a horrible mechanic. And he called me. He was like, how you going to say that shit? And then you tried to call me. And I was like, dude, I said, now if I was lying, it would be okay. I said, but you did fuck up my car. What I did to your car, I said, the Green Montero, you told me you was giving me a head job. You put a fucking barbecue spatula in my car to keep the spark plug from jumping up. I don't remember that. I said, I know, but you were not a mechanic at the time. And we argued like a motherfucker yesterday. And finally, he texted me back to my, yeah, I did do that dinner. I said, and you took my $300.
Yeah.
So I was like, I got to watch what I say, because now my family, you know, they kind of think I got some money. I don't have no fucking money, but everybody want to argue now. Oh, how you say that shit about our mama? I said, well, I was pregnant at 14. Let's be honest. We didn't have the best mama. We wasn't born into the best situation. Yeah. You motherfuckers can stay and deny you all y'all want to. And so I'm just having real problems with them. Black people see their relatives on TV and think they done made it. You could be on Cops and you still famous in the hood.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, y'all lost your fucking minds.
Well, you look at you're probably the number one person I know that podcasting changed their lives.
Yes, let me tell you something. Podcasting is my Johnny Carson.
Yes.
Podcast has done for me what Johnny Carson did for comedians in the 70s and 80s.
I was telling someone the other day, I was in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you don't know Miss Pat? And they were like, no, who is she? And I was like, oh my God, you got to listen to my podcast. And then they came down, they're like, I was listening, I fast forwarded through the ads, and they were like, within a minute in, I was like, who the fuck is this person? And I mean, I think podcasting changed my life too, because I'd go on and do radio and do bits. Now I'm having a really hard time in the industry because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing sometimes. Cause, like, you go to Montreal and they want you to do 8 minutes, and I'm like, I can't do what I do in 8 minutes. Yeah. 8 minutes isn't a fair representation of what I do. Like, what I do is, and that's probably a lazy thing to say, but I just feel like 8 minutes is hard to do 8 minutes.
Well, when you're a headliner and they tell you to take your best bits and put them in 8 minutes, you're like, dude.
I stopped trying to do clever, funny drive-through bits a long time ago. Like, what works there is a guy who's young and new and he's thinking out of the box, and he's got zany stuff that would work on the road but doesn't work on an hour for an hour on the road.
Yes.
And so, but yeah, podcasting fucked me up a little bit because it changed my dialogue with my on stand-up, because I feel like I get on stage and I want to do more of the longer form, true to life, fun stories, and less of like a bit. Like sometimes I write a bit, I go, that feels like a bit.
Yeah, it's just like set up and punchline. So,
yeah.
And I think that's what comedy is getting back to. I truly believe that comedy is getting back to, like it used to be, storytelling, you know, stuff about you. I think the audience is looking more than to know who the comedian is, just to see you on the floor humping a fucking table or a chair. I think they really want to know who that person is. They like walking away saying, I was in that person's world for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that. And you, I mean, I remember when you did Ari's first storytelling show, I remember talking to Ari, and he was like, I was like, how's her story? He goes, her story's fantastic. She's just too close to stand-up right now. She needs to get away from her stand-up and just be her who she is on this podcast. And then you did it, and I go, how was it? And he goes, fucking perfect.
He helped me with that. I'm telling you, we emailed back and forth, and he really whipped me into shape for that. It's not easy doing this is not happening now, because he don't want the stand-up version. He want the story. So I had to go back in my mind and remember that my car had gold flakes, and I had the pistol in the baby bag and all of that stuff. And I gave it to him. I said, okay, I'm laying all this shit out that I really don't tell. And it became a great bit for his TV show.
It's the small details that make a story really great. It's the thing that it's almost like a distraction almost. You tell someone something that they don't, and they're like, why am I hearing this? But it's interesting and it's factual. And you're like that, I don't know.
I think the audience liked it. I think they like when they feel like they're a part of it. I think storytelling make the audience feel like they're a part of your life. Like, people call me Rabbit because they heard me on Everybody Podcast.
Yeah.
And they know that was my drug dealer name. And when you say Rabbit, a little button go off in my head like, what the fuck? Somebody know who the fuck I am.
Yeah.
I'm undercover as Miss Pat. But when you say Rabbit, you bring back all that bullshit I ever done in my life.
Felipe Esparza said, when people call him Batman, that was his drug dealing name. Uh-huh. Batman, he said, when they call me Batman, it throws me off. He's like, it takes me back to a different time in my life.
It do. And I walked in, I walked into Mon Hour and the Funny Bone, and this white dude was like,
where
Rabbit.
Did you walk into?
I'm fucking up the name. Hour, Des Moines. Well, how you pronounce it?
Des Moines, Iowa.
Des Moines, Iowa.
I was like, where the fuck were you in Europe?
Sound like half of the shit I say sound like I'm in Europe. But, I go there and somebody streams and he start hollering Rabbit, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I was like, don't nobody know who the fuck I am here. But it was some fans that heard me from podcasts.
It's funny because that's the hour, that's stand up. And then you do like you did the roast battle the other night, and that's just straight joke writing.
Yeah, that's straight joke writing. And by the way, Raffy May shouldn't have beat me. He had one gorilla joke on a black person.
He had one gorilla joke.
On a black person. You fat racist motherfucker, Errol Rapping Man. And I hope you listening to this, too, with a titty between your legs, you fat fuck.
Yeah, that was funny because I knew you had done it because I was there when you did it. And I came home the next day, that morning, and I was in the house, and I was like, oh, we should watch Roast Battle tonight. I didn't tell Leanne you were going to be on it. And you popped up on the screen, and Leanne goes, oh my God, is that Miss Pat? Miss Pat? And I went, yeah. And she goes, oh, she looks beautiful. That was the first thing I said to you when I saw you in Montreal. You look fantastic.
Well, people don't realize I lost like 50 pounds.
Really?
Yep. I stopped eating, started exercising.
I see you working out on your Periscope.
Yeah, yeah, I started exercise. I don't get to put it on there every day because I'm like, I can't have this shit every day, y'all. Some days I just ain't this shit to my hair.
I just can't
let you in my life every day. But I'm working out. I hired a personal trainer. And I'm just trying to, to just live better, make, you know, feel better. I feel so much fun. Let me say, I'm so close to tying my own shoes. My kids are so fucking happy.
Can I tell you something?
What?
That's the realest fuck. The realest thing people talk about. Like, I've been going through. I don't know if you know about the Tom Segura thing. Got back and forth about who's fat.
Oh yeah, and they like you getting fatter.
Oh, they fucking love it. But it, when people call you fat all day long, every day of your life. You start, it starts weighing on you. But what's crazy is it's when you start, I'm trying to lose weight, but when you try, we're losing weight, like the littlest thing, it brings joy to you. Like being able, for me, but be like, I got to the point, I haven't lost a ton of weight, but I lost enough weight where I can shave my balls. And, like before that, it was just a bunch of guesswork.
Leanne was shaving them.
No. I'd never let her down there. But like, it's like just comfortable clothes.
Yeah.
Like just sitting on a plane in jeans.
Oh, and not asking for an extension.
Yeah.
I'm always asking for an extension because I got a big ass and plus I'm fat. But I just feel so much better. You know how nice it feels to see your drawers go all the way up under your titties? They used to stop right at the bottom of the other. You know, I got two stomachs. They usually just stop. Today I pulled them all the way up to my titties. So I called my husband. I say, "Ah, my fucking panties can touch my bra."
Wait, what? So what were you doing? Are you just eating right?
Uh huh. I cut back on
like,
the eating.
For me, it's booze. I don't drink alcohol. Super, yeah, it's super easy. If I just stop drinking, I just start losing weight.
Yeah.
And then if I can get to a manageable weight, I can start drinking again and maintain there.
Well, I just, the bread, stop drinking sodas.
You don't drink diet sodas?
Mm-mm. I drink a little unsweetened tea. I stopped all of that.
Really?
And my skin look better. I smell better, I think. I feel better. Because, you know, I went through a surgery. I had a couple hernias. My stomach started hurting.
Really?
So I was in the hospital a couple months ago, and I had a couple of hernias. And I just said, you know, I got diabetes, a high blood pressure. I'm taking this medicine. I'm like, I'm sick of being fat. And then, you know, Bert, I've been married for over 25 years. I haven't been on top in 23 years.
Really? I haven't been on top in about a few months, maybe a year. There's no getting me on top. My arms start giving out. I'm like, no, this isn't happening. And I just think that's got to be disgusting for her to just feel my gut on her stomach.
Not when she love you, because my husband got a gut too. When they love you, we don't see none of that shit. But I'm already got saggy titties and shit. I'm like, I'm finna fix myself. You got to compete with these young hoes. You know my dream? I just want a navel ring.
Really?
That's all I want. That is so sexy. Every time I see a bitch with one, I want to kick her in her navel.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. My dream is I want to, I don't know, my goal weight is pretty manageable. It's like, I just want to get to like 220. Like I just want
to. I'm trying to do 175. And I'm not afraid to say, most people are afraid to talk about their weight. I was at 347 pounds. That's the heaviest I ever been.
Really?
Yeah, and I actually made a bit about it because my kids hate oiling my feet and tying my shoes. And my son graduated in 2 years, and I was like, I got to lose weight. I don't even have nobody to fucking tie my shoes.
My son's graduating in 2 years, I got to lose weight.
He's sick of me. They are sick of tying my shoes and helping me pull my girdles up and button up my bra.
I got to a place where I had a hard time wiping my ass.
Oh.
I pulled a muscle wiping my ass one time.
Really?
Yeah, I pulled a muscle. It was right before New Year's. this last past New Year's, the fattest I've ever been. It was in November, and I weighed myself, and I think I weighed 255, and I was like shit. And then I had like a blowout weekend where I was like, I'm only 255. Who gives a fuck? I'm eating wings and pizza. And then I came home and I was going to wipe my ass, and I felt a muscle. I wiped from the front too, by the way. And so, I know.
You got shit on your balls, Bert.
No, I know. I'm just.
That's a female's wife.
Yeah, that's what I was taught. And so I wasn't taught. I just did it. No one stopped me. And so I pulled a muscle in my back. I went, are you fucking kidding me? Like trying to put on roller skates and you pull it. You get like a stinger in your back. You're like, son of a bitch. And so, so I was like, I'm losing weight. I got down to 235. And then I've just been going back and forth this whole spring, winter, spring, summer. And right now, I'm not happy with where I'm at, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel a tad bit.
Yes.
Cause I'm like, I partied really hard in Montreal.
Well, I had a problem wiping my ass too, and my arms are really short, and I'm short, and I got a big butt.
Yeah.
So when you got a big ass and you got to wrestle your way in and hope you pull everything back out, I was like, I almost felt like I had Tourette's arms.
Yeah.
That's how short my arms was and how big my ass was. So I was like, I got to lose weight.
My wife, one time, this was probably recent, it was when I was big, wiped my ass, got on the treadmill, and I was like, I felt like a burning, like I was like, son of a bitch, like something's going on. And I walked inside. I was like, hey, I'm going to take a shower. Will you look at my asshole? And she's like, I have no interest in looking at your asshole. I know, and something's wrong with it. And we're getting ready to go out to a wine tasting. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. So I take a shower. I wash. And then I'm totally dressed. I get into the kitchen.
You got a peanut in your eyes.
I got one of those dingleberry, like the toilet paper wrapped up in hair. And I was like, and it was just, every time I was walking, it was the hair pulling. And I was like, son of a fucking.
Yeah. Toilet paper shaving your ass for you, Bert.
I know.
That's
it was,
when you know you fat.
That's when you, man, there's been a bunch of times where I've been like, where I've just kind of been like, holy shit, man, I need to really, like, just moments of clarity is like what they are.
But you know, like, I see Joe Rogan working out all the time, a fantastic body. But it's got to be mental. You know, when you've been eating good and when you choose food over the gym and you look at other people, and that's what I was like, I can't die like this.
Well, someone said to me the other day, they go, so what's the purpose of eating? Who was I with? I was with my buddy Eric. He goes, what's the purpose of, I mean, he goes, you can do those diets that are like hardcore, you know? Mm-hmm. My dad's buddy's on a diet that's 500 calories a day. Chicken breast and broccoli in the morning, fish and broccoli at night. And you got to eat a lot of broccoli. And he's like, he's lost like 15 pounds. And it's been like 3 weeks, 2 weeks. And I was like, wow. And my buddy's like, well, yeah, you can do that. But then when you get off it,
You go back fat.
And that's what happens to me is I go healthy when I'm home. And I drop weight. And if I get an extended stay home, I drop weight. And then I go on the road, and I'm like, I'm back at comedy clubs. Yes. It's really hard to eat healthy on the road.
I stopped eating at comedy clubs. You have to. Everything is dipped in fries. I just stayed gay. I just started buying my own shit.
Like when you get there?
Well, when I get there, I usually buy my own shit. And to keep me, you know how you always want to eat? I started buying those little protein packs. You know, the little power protein.
Oh, yeah,
they got
nuts
and berries. So I just buy that even when I'm on a plane. So, because, you know, when you like to eat, your mind always say, eat. So I just started shoving that shit in my mouth.
I get into a place, like, I think I have a real addiction with food. Because I get into a place where.
Everybody got addiction.
No, mine's like, I can hear, you know what, when you see a movie and you're like, and the drug addict is holding it together by like the skin of his teeth, and then all of a sudden someone does something in front of him. He's like, fuck it. And then he just goes down and starts blowing the dude and smoking crack. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh man. I had that moment with food where I was like, I was in Chicago and there was a delay on my flight and I was hungry. And I was like, if I can get on the plane, I won't eat. And then they're like, we're going to be delayed 45 minutes. And my brain's like, you got to fucking eat. And I walked right over to McDonald's, ordered 4 cheeseburgers, took off the bottom bun, folded them up like tacos, and murdered them. And just, I went to a hiding place because I was afraid someone was going to fucking see me and take a picture and be like, oh, look at this fat ass eating. And I was no fries, Diet Coke, and just, and put half the bread. So I figured that's the healthy part, right?
No.
No.
McDonald's.
Yeah, McDonald's was a fucking. Well, you're an inspiration. I'm gonna get down. This is my goal.
I walked through. You know what I started doing? This is how I started with my grandbaby and my daughter-in-law in the morning. We started to walk a mile, and each week I added a mile, so I'm up to 3 miles a day.
Really?
And when I'm on the road, I get on that treadmill and I do at least 2 to 3 miles, and then I just try to work out my arm. Like I'm not at weights yet, but I do 3 miles a day.
That's all you got. You know, someone told me the number one thing about dieting is just, or losing weight is diet. If you can eat healthy,
yeah,
and eat responsible, and I'm doing that right now, and I'm losing weight. I'm definitely losing weight from like Calgary. My problem is like that. I went to Calgary with Ari. And I went off the fucking rails. It was like, because they're all young. Not yes. Ari. Ari's my age. But, like, everyone I was with was young. And they were all just, let's get a pizza when we got done drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what am I going to lock myself in the room like fucking Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Like, I'm going to
eat the fucking pizza.
And I was like, I'll have a piece of pizza. And then you have one. You're like, fuck it. I already ate one. Let's
fucking
eat
them
all.
And then they don't even gain weight from eating that bullshit.
None of them. They're like, oh, that pizza really soaked up the alcohol. I'm like, let's order another pizza.
How did you enjoy Montreal?
I liked it. That stuff catches me off guard because there's a lot of people I know, but I don't know their names.
Okay.
And that makes me nervous because I'm afraid I'm going to offend someone that might want to work with me.
Oh, you're talking about industry.
Oh, yeah.
You just talk to them like you know their name. That's what I do.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't know people's name either.
Yeah, but you can get away with it. You got like a whole thing that comes with you. and people fall in love with you the second you meet them. And you can just be like, I don't know your name. What's your name? And they'll be like, oh, we met last time. Oh, yeah. But with me, it's like, Bert, I've known you for 13 years. And you're like, oh, yeah, I've never got around to figuring out what your name was.
Well, it was just ask. I mean, just be honest. I mean, the older you get, your sight go, your memory go. You got a family. You doing shit at your house. You can't remember everything. So just say, hey, excuse me, what's your name again?
I just hang out with Ari and tap him on the shoulder. I go, who's this guy?
Yeah, Ari probably knows.
Ari knows everybody.
Yes, he
Ari,
does.
Big J Okerson, they know fucking everybody. They know people that book like open mics in Wichita.
And Wichita don't even exist to some people. Like, what the fuck
Tell
is
me
Wichita?
About it. Oh, you don't know him? Oh, he works, he does a room down in Atlanta. And you're like, how the fuck would you? Like, I would never remember that.
Yeah, Ari knows it. Everybody knows Ari. Everybody. My kids knew Ari from that racist shit he was doing.
Oh, really?
My son thought that was the most hilarious shit when he went in that, that black cleaners with the KKK thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, Mama, you gotta see this. And my son was in the flow laughing. I was like, that is the racist shit I ever seen in my life.
It's, man, Ari.
My son loves Ari.
Ari does not give a fuck.
And that's what I love about him. Ari don't give a fuck to the fact that he went and got him a flip phone.
Oh, yeah. I think, I told him the other day, we're sitting in a living room, and he's got his flip phone, and he's on an iPad, and he's walking around with an iPad, and I go, you know, hey, if that was all in one place, like you had your phone, you could do it on your phone. You wouldn't need to fly around with an iPad and walk around with like an iPad like a child whose parents don't trust him with the internet.
Yeah.
So how did you get ready for the roast battle?
I had friends. I came up with a lot of stuff, and I had friends that also helped me.
Yeah.
Because you also need an extra ear, somebody to help tweet it. But I didn't really want to do the roast battle because I don't like to be talked about. And I'm not, I don't take you, you know, you're going to call me fat, but I don't take to that really well. And I would like to knock the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
But my manager was like, we'll go up to Chicago and give it a try. And I was like, oh, fuck. And he's like, it's Comedy Central, Miss Pat. They're inviting you to do shit. So I said, okay. And I went up there and I did really well. I was like, it wasn't that bad. It's over. I didn't think I won. Then they invited me to Montreal. And then I had to go up against Raff, and I was like, oh, shit. Because Raph is very funny.
Raph is funny, and that's his sweet spot, is those roast battle jokes.
Yeah. So.
But he didn't do as well as I thought he would do.
No. You know what he didn't do? I don't think he did his research, because it was so much shit he could have hit Mike Lawrence with. And the jokes he used on me was just, you know, it was kind of generic. Like, he did a Bill Cosby joke. And not to say he got it from there, but the boy in Chicago used the same type of Bill Cosby joke on me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't think he prepared like Mike Lawrence and me. And
he did not. I don't think Ralph. I really think Ralphie went in and winged it. Like, I don't think he. I think he had like one or two jokes written, and he just tried to come up with shit on the fly.
Yeah.
Because he did not. Like, I was expecting him to bring out the big guns, and it was, you know, it was okay. Like, I looked at the whole thing as a whole, and it was a toss up. You know, but like, I could not have done it. Like, when I saw you up there, I was like, I could not be standing where you're standing.
You know, but you know what, Bert? I had so much fucking fun doing it.
Really?
I would do it again, because I've never roast before.
Yeah.
So this was brand new for me. I mean, being there and that scenery on that type of TV, it was new for me.
Yeah.
But I walked away. I was not mad that I lost.
Yeah,
I was not mad. I thought that
you came out best case scenario, because you don't. This is the way I looked at it. You want to go out early. You don't want to be lasting, because the more you last, the more people point out your flaws,
mm-hmm.
and the more people see you for weak instead of strong. You got to be a murderer to come out of that. Like, my hat's off to Sarah Tiana, to Earl, to Mike Lawrence.
Mike Lawrence
fucking murdered it. Trevor Wilson.
Yes.
Those guys.
But they roast every weekend in New York and in California. I've never roasted before. Not making up no excuses, because I thought I did my best for my first time around. But I would like to do it again. I mean, Sarah Tiana was fucking hilarious.
The reason they did so well is they seemed to be disconnected from it. Like, you know, like all those names, like Ralphie, even myself, like when I watched Ralphie, like I noticed that someone would give him a critique and he would just get fucking mad.
Because he'd been doing it a long time.
It's hard.
Rich.
It's really hard. And he's a fucking pro. Yeah. And it's really hard to take a note from Seth Rogen.
Who ain't never did stand-up.
Yeah, and all he's done is did a movie about stand-up, and now everyone believes he's a stand-up, and he can be celebrated there as, like, a genius, and his opinion, and Judd Apatow, who, Judd Apatow's a stand-up, but, like, their opinions are more important than Ralphie's or Jeff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that was the kind of shitty thing I thought was that you bring in people that aren't stand-ups to judge, and they got their 2 cents. Like Jimmy Kimmel, I'd like Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not shitting on Jimmy Kimmel, but he said something about Jimmy Carr, and I felt like going, Jimmy Kimmel should be very careful talking to Jimmy Carr like that, because Jimmy Carr is a fucking monster.
Man, I'm sorry, but I didn't see Jimmy Carr losing it.
I did not see Jimmy Carr losing it. You know what it was?
Earl was surprised, like, fuck, you picked me?
Well, because oh Jimmy God, goes, I can't get past The Notebook. And I went, first of all,
that's his style.
That's part of his act. It's not...
It's like you saying, Miss Pat, take your wig off. No, motherfucker, this wig come with me.
Jimmy Kimmel saying that, I couldn't get past The Notebook. I felt like going, don't say that out loud, Jimmy Kimmel, because you are respected in comedy, but you're not as respected as Jimmy Carr. Jimmy Carr is the fucking top of the mountain. When he roasts, and the big problem Jimmy Carr had is that he had done a lot of his A jokes last year, not knowing there'd be a TV show this year. So he couldn't just go through and use older stuff, because we'd all heard it. And so, like, I remember last year, Jimmy Carr, someone said something about Jimmy Carr's mom. And he said, well, if you'd like my comeback, you'd have to wipe it off the back of your mom's teeth. And the place went fucking nuts. And Jimmy Carr is a monster. Jimmy Carr's richer than Jimmy Kimmel. He's richer than, if you combined all the comics that showed up there.
Who is he?
Jimmy Carr's one of the wealthiest fucking guys in the world. He's one of the most successful stand-ups in the world. No questions asked.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Over here?
In England.
Oh, okay.
He got chastised by the prime minister for evading taxes. The prime minister chastised Jimmy Carr on their national television, saying that he was not being a proper citizen or whatever. Carr's got so much money. He was shuffling his money to offshore oil rigs, like offshore, not oil rigs, shell companies, to try to hide money. That's how fucking much money he's got.
Really?
And when Jimmy Kimmel was like even Earl will say, that was a Cubs win the World Series moment.
That was, because I did not see Earl winning. He did a great job, but he was out of joke.
He
was out of fucking joke. He had no joke at the end.
Earl was great because Earl approached it like it was bigger. He brought more to it than what was there on the stage. So he walked out with a clipboard, broke it over his knee, said, I don't need that. I got them all up here. Earl knows full well Jimmy Carr doesn't need it either. His jokes aren't even fucking written on there, I'm certain. He just uses it as like let me take a look at this real quick. Oh, here's one. All right. There we go. But Earl doing that, it fucking set the stage to, like, this is next level. Earl came out in a costume every time. Yeah. And it was really smart because he brought the theatrics to it. I was hoping Earl would win the whole thing. Earl's one of the funniest guys. I don't think he gets enough respect, in my opinion. When you watch on the roast battles when they have it at the Comedy Store, Earl snipes in with comments from the audience, and that's his job. Every time, funnier than anyone that's on the stage. Every fucking time.
He was hilarious.
Mike Lawrence, a beast.
I did New Faces with Mike Lawrence. And we at that time it was 6 years ago. So I don't even remember his stand up. But when I got into this competition, everybody was like, Mike Lawrence is gonna win. Mike Lawrence, and I knew him from he's a great joke writer. I told him, joke writer, I said, I got a project I think I can use you for.
Yeah.
And I know he think I'm bullshitting, but if it goes, I'm like, I'm coming to get you. I got a voice that you can write for.
Yeah, he really fucking, him, K. Trevor Wilson's hilarious across the board, but I knew that last year. Mike Lawrence really stood out to me.
Oh, you know my funniest joke, and Raffy went online and got mad about it, when he said, black people love you because you bust through the wall like the Kool-Aid man. I damn near wet my panty liner. I said, that is the, why the fuck did I think of that? Black, I'm black and we like Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Man, he was so fucking funny.
If you had said it, it would have been 10 times funnier. Ralph, when you came on stage, I first got excited because I'm black and you busted through the wall like Kool-Aid. That would have been like, that was a great joke.
But after he beat Ralph, he came to me, he said, I beat him for you, Miss Pat. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah, you can't. That's the other thing is you can't take it personal.
No, you cannot.
I would take it personal.
I kind of took it personal with the gorilla joke because I'm like, y'all, come on. Okay, that was his best joke. I still walk a mile in Raffy's shoes. You be the first to walk a mile in Raffy's shoes.
Yeah, that was a good joke.
I was like, I had two other good jokes after that. So, but you know, I can always come back next year because my name is not as big as Raffy.
I was thinking about writing. I thought in my head, I was like, last year, I was like, I'll write all year. For this, I just all year, just throughout the time, I'll write roast jokes of fat or this or that, and then I was like, oh no, that's right, I don't want to be roasted, I don't want anyone to make fun of me or point out my insecurities because I will, I'll be fucked up.
You should
up.
Do it. You should. No, they should do an all star. It is so fucking fun.
I have a hard time with that, and I gotta be honest with you, I admired you, and you know who else was really funny? It was fucking Mark Norman. He was only in, I think, the first round, but he was really funny. Mark Norman, he tours with Amy.
No, I don't remember him.
He was really funny. He battled Tony. Tony's a beast at that, but Tony does it. Tony does it every fucking
Tony
week.
When Tony walked out in that fucking armor suit, that dude killed Tony. But that was a battle. It was back and forth. And I think the only reason why Tony won is because he didn't have a last joke. That last joke about healthcare. It was like, oh.
Wait. Who did Tony battle? K. Trevor Wilson?
I think it was Trevor, whatever his name is. He told him, you the only fat person in Canada that don't have health care or some shit.
Yeah.
But that was a hell of a battle.
And that was the funny line was someone saying, the best part is watching Tony get eliminated in a night suit.
Yes.
In an armor suit of armor.
No, when he told Tony, he said... something about he's a bitch, he's gay.
Yeah.
That line killed me too.
But it's like someone says something. Here's what I don't like about roast battle. Is someone will go, you guys may not know this, but Tony hit his last girlfriend. And everyone's like, Tony hit his last girlfriend? Which I'm sure is a fucking lie.
It was a lie.
Yeah. And you're like, you can't say that. Like, because now everyone's like, Tony beats women.
I was thinking, I'm a woman, like, what bitch let that little man hit her?
Yeah, Tony does not hit women.
I know he don't hit women.
And so in my head, I'm like, don't fucking say that. You just go up and say, Ralphie's father was the head of the Ku Klux Klan. And everyone's like, what? You guys didn't know that? And they go, there's no joke. All right, next one.
Yeah, they lied on Tony, but it was great. I'm glad I did that.
I was really proud of you. I was proud of you and like, not. I say proud of you. I didn't mean it proud of you like proud of you that like, I'm so happy. I admired what you did. I admired that Ralphie did it. I admired that you did it, that Mark did it, that when Tony did it, that like anyone, I mean, Earl, I was like, I'm glad Earl's doing it, but Earl, that's part of Earl's baby. That's part of Earl's life. That roast battle is something he's been on for years. So that's, he claimed ownership of that, in my opinion. But like, and same with Sarah. Sarah's a beast on that. It was cool to see her and K. Trevor Wilson, who I feel like owns a little piece of that too, because he did it last year and did so well, and Jimmy Carr. It was cool to see them do it. But at the same time, someone like yourself, I was like, I just looked up to you. I was like, I couldn't be there. I could not be standing.
You know what? I felt real special because I was the only black person on there.
On the whole thing.
Yeah, so to me, it was like, it was like people rooting for Obama.
Yeah. That was... That was fucking crazy. Did you have a good time the rest of the week?
I did Kevin Hart new Laugh Out Loud show.
How was that?
It was good. It was really good. And I did a show at the Comedy Nest. And I just hung out.
That's the best part. But what do you do when you don't drink and you hang out? What do you do? Just talk to people?
Just talk to people. Meet people. Fuck get to that. Know people. Half of the time my representation was there. I felt really good because this time I had representation. Last time I didn't.
Yeah.
So I just hung out with my manager. I went to go watch a few shows.
I met your manager.
John McDonald. He brought me to your house last time.
Oh, that's right. I thought, I was like, mm-hmm. I was like, hey. He's like, hey, Bert. I was like, wait, how the fuck do I know you? And then and then he said his name. I go, I know you. And he was John, like, yeah.
John McDonald, I'm going to tell you, he's a great guy. It's hard to find somebody who really cares about you in this business. And I call, let me tell you, he's so good, I call him my white daddy. Dude, that's how good he is. He turned pink every time I turn tell him that shit. He's like, Miss Pat, I don't think that's appropriate. But when you can actually find people who care about you in this business, I mean literally about you, not about how much dollars you're going to put in their pocket. And that guy cares about me. He took me when nobody else wanted me. He turned my career around. He was honest. He's like, no, this fucking joke is too easy. And we will argue. Fuck you. You don't know shit. Da, da, da. And
yeah.
He's always right. I mean, he's the guy that got the Kings of Comedy. No, I'm sorry. What's that? Redneck of Comedy with
the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
He started that.
Yeah.
They all started that. Yeah, him and his partner started that. So he knows a lot about comedy, and he turned my career around.
It's great when you got this business is so filled with
bullshit and people that say they.
Know.
That will say that they're your friends, but really not your friends.
They don't give a fuck about you.
They don't give a fuck about you. So it's hard to find somebody who really give a fuck about you.
I got to send a tweet for Travel Channel real quick. Hey, guys, Travel Channel, Bert Conquer is airing every Tuesday again. I tried to post this video that's so fucking funny, and I got blocked from Scripps. So bummed out. It's the funniest fucking thing.
Let me see it.
It's up. Hang on one second.
Is it you flying in the air with no clothes on, Burke?
No.
So are you guys in a competition for this Burke is fat? Is whoever lose the most weight?
I don't even know. Now we're just insulting each other. That's
so
all we're doing.
Who lost the most weight?
Tom's never going to lose weight. Tom's born like that. Like he's got those Peruvian genetics that those low mountain Peruvian genetics. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just never gonna. That's never gonna happen.
Is he trying to lose weight?
He's trying, but he doesn't. You know.
You mean to tell
me? I'm gonna say something. Let me tweet it. Post this. It's 11 minutes. Oh, let me see. Okay, watch Bert the Conqueror on Travel Channel at 8/7 Central. I learned to fly with the help of Jetpack Roaming Gnome. All right, there we go. My obligation is done. I'll say this to you, but it's going to sound racist what I'm saying, but I'm saying it to you as a friend,
okay.
And if I'm wrong, correct me.
Okay.
But sometimes I think black people almost like have the weirdest view of what a good diet is.
You fuck yeah, we like soul food.
Yeah, like
we don't know why y'all eat cheese sandwiches. That is the most ridiculous, stupid shit. Pimento cheese. You'll never get a black person taking a pimento cheese sandwich to work.
I saw this guy at the gas station yesterday. Young black kid, in great shape. He's in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's not fat, and he had like a juice like a pressed juice from from Whole Foods across the street, and it looked good. And he was fucking murdering it. I said, what is that? And he goes, oh, doctor's orders. My sugar's high. And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah. So they told me to get on beet juice. I said, really? And he goes, yeah. And I have them put in strawberries, grape, apple, and orange. And it's really good. And I went.
You just put the sugar back in that bitch.
Yeah. Like, that's really bad. And he was buying Skittles, Now-O-Laters, and Starburst. And I went. And I looked at him and I was like. He's like, you know what I mean? You got to stay healthy. And I looked at him. I was like. White people, I'm generalizing. You can't ever generalize, but it's like there are generalizations I find about black people that I go that might be across the board. Like black people have a really easy time falling asleep. Like, I've never
met. Do you know my husband?
Does he?
That motherfucker take his when he take his pants off, he sleep taking his pants off.
Yeah, like I was on a plane next to Common, and Common fell asleep. On the tarmac. Common was asleep waiting for the plane at the gate. He was asleep in the chair. He got on the plane sitting first class, and he fell asleep in the plane before we take off. He slept for the whole fucking flight. I sat next to him. He slept for the whole fucking flight. There was turbulence. I drank myself to death thinking I was going to die. We landed, and he this motherfucker had the balls to say, have we taken off yet? And I went, are you fuck? Like, if you go in the subway in New York, brothers will fall asleep on the subway. I could never fall asleep on a subway.
You probably, white people are scary as fuck.
I could never fall asleep. I have a hard time falling asleep. Like, I didn't sleep at all last night. My wife never sleeps.
I sleep.
What?
I fall asleep too, like that.
Really?
But I'm black, so we talking about black
like
people.
Like I want to do a website called Brand New Stereotypes,
uh-huh.
where you put up a stereotype that you notice and you, that isn't racist, but it's just like, hey, I started to notice that like black people fall asleep very easily
anywhere,
and then people can rate it and go yes or no, and it becomes a new stereotype. You know, like, but that's one, and then the one I was going to say about what, but like white people. Like, I wonder what, if there's, like, a problem with eating disorders in the African-American community. Like, the way it is. I wonder, well, if that's just a white girl disease.
No. Eating disorder? Like, oh, fuck.
Like bulimia.
No, we don't do bulimia. Let me tell you why. Because when you a black girl and you throw up your mama food, you're going to get your ass beat.
Really?
So a black mom be like, no, bitch, you don't want to eat my collard greens and you throwing them up, eat that shit back up. You're not wasting my money.
Yeah.
So we never, but you know, black girls don't worry about being fat. If you notice, if white girls are fat, they got low self-esteem. The bigger the black bitch, the more confidence you get. I don't give a fuck, I'm cute.
Yeah.
You'll see a big bitch with heels look like she got 2 feet on 1 foot. And she'll still try to put
one foot.
She still try to fucking put on heels. They wear thongs. If you go in fat girl shops, nobody buy thongs but fat black bitches. They'll put on an orange, they'll put on a tangerine suit, and you're like, what the fuck? They put on stripes, they put on black women don't give a fuck, because we feel like we are beautiful no matter what. But in the when the white race, white women think if you get fat, then you're not attractive. No, bitch, you look good.
Yeah.
You look good. But that's just how they're raised. The fatter you get, the uglier you get. Well, I see white girls all the time with no confidence. But if they hung out with black bitches that was fat with confidence, they'll be walking around with their backs out.
Really?
Now, some black bitches have got too much confidence. Like, you can see them on the beach in a two-piece. They don't give a fuck.
So I'm amazed sometimes when I see... Like, that's the one thing that this whole fat thing has opened my eyes up to is like people who really embrace it and just go.
Black people embrace anything. They don't give a fuck. We don't give a fuck.
Black people, you know, my eyes for racism is like for what racism in this country is have really opened up these last few months because I saw Roots. Have you ever seen Roots?
I'm black. What kind of question is that?
Have you seen Roots?
What kind of question is that?
Of course you have.
Of course I have. Which Roots? The old Roots or the new
Roots?
I saw
the new one.
Okay, the new one. Yeah, that one's good too. You should go watch the old one. You'll be crying.
Really?
Because this new Roots is really good, but they got what's so crazy. These motherfuckers fight back. But in the old Roots, they didn't really fight back.
Really?
Yeah, the black people fought back.
There are common themes in white culture that have kind of permeated that white people have said on news, usually conservatives, but like one of them that really stuck out to me, and in watching Roots, I went, how racist was Ebonics? They're like, how dare, like, speak proper English. And that's like one of the things that's like been like a thing throughout
black kids. Yeah, we're known for speaking for speaking Ebonics. But I mean, it's like what the slave master did. They didn't give us books. We wasn't allowed to read. We wasn't allowed to learn. And
it was better
did,
if you couldn't
shit.
Communicate.
Yeah, you got beat. You could barely fucking talk.
Yeah, and in watching Roots, I realized that like that is fucking. Can I tell you what else blew my mind? I mean, I stuck with this for like 3 days. I could not get past it. How often is people. You hear on the news these days with all the shit going down, you hear and with Black Lives Matters, and I think Black Lives Matters, if you on my Facebook, the people I grew up with are like, all lives matter. And that's not, I don't know. I'm not on that side. I'm fairly liberal, but I hear both sides of the fence. But one of the things that really stuck with me is everyone said we've made so much progress.
No, we haven't.
But that progress
is nothing.
Is nothing. We just started. We just started. If you look back, what, 60 years ago? 60 years ago, black people didn't have rights.
They didn't have rights.
60 years ago.
But you can't tell white people who's in denial. And white people continue to say, why don't y'all move on? Well, motherfucker, how can I move on when you just had my mama that couldn't, you was treating my mama and my grandmama like shit.
Yeah.
That's that white privilege that's blind. Like, I have a police officer that live in my neighborhood. And he, like, with all the black killings, let me tell you something, Burton. This is coming from the bottom of my heart. You, white people don't know what it is to have a African-American son in this country. And I tell my boys all the time, when you born black in this country, you already born with a stripe across your fucking head. So for them to sit there and for my kids to be in this country scare me every fucking day. I talk to both of my sons. I might not call my daughter, but I go over the routine to say, son, if you get pulled over, yes sir, no sir, speak nicely, don't reach for shit. Now, you ain't gotta never say that to your white son if you had one.
No, but I will say this. I was raised that way. If you don't ever talk back to a cop, if you get pulled
but
over.
I see white people talking back to a cop all the time. They
I definitely see it.
But if we do it, mother, we get shot. But it's so scary now because that shit can happen to anybody of race. My thing is why are white people so scared of black people? I mean, you are an officer. And I know. I mean, I'm down the fence. You don't disrespect no officer. You don't shoot at an officer, and the officer shouldn't shoot you. But why, like with Sandra Bland, the black girl who he pulled out the car in Texas and body slammed her because she said she switched lanes without a fucking, you know.
Is that the one that died in prison?
Died in prison. First of all, who the fuck go to jail for switching lane? And she got the right not to put out her cigarette, but you dogged her out. She's a fucking woman, and you dogged her out.
Yeah.
And I was telling the police guy in Indianapolis who's a big Trump fan, he was like, well, Miss Pat, why are you scared? I said, bitch, because I'm black. Do you not get it? I said, you might make me your chosen nigger, but your friend might not know I'm your chosen nigger friend. Yeah. So he just don't get it. Well, why are you scared for Garrett? Because one of your racist ass friends might feel like shooting a nigga that day and shoot my motherfucking son. Not that my kid's a nigga, but that's how you think as a black parent. I cannot rest until I know both of my boys is in the house. So, and I told him this. I said, you're not going to get it until you go get some black pussy and you raise a black son in this fucking fucked up country. You're not going to know the fear that I go through as a mother every single day. And let me tell you something, Bert. My kids has never been in jail. They ain't never been in trouble. They don't do drugs. But you don't have to. All these motherfuckers see is a big boy, 16 years old, I'm threatened and blow my son's brains out. I get every time I see somebody get killed, it scares the shit out of me. Cause it's not police saying if it's let me ask you this. Shoot. Have anybody ever thought about why black cops ain't shooting white guys?
No.
I mean, one or two maybe, but it's damn near a black guy get killed every weekend. Look at the man who
are black guys dying at an outrageous number, and
we kill ourselves. So don't come sending me no message to my. Well, what about Chicago? Yeah, we do kill ourselves, but you don't expect a person who take a job to protect you to blow your fucking brains out because you got a gun on you, but you got a permit.
Yeah,
I mean, and the NRA didn't say shit. It's okay to just shoot a man who's selling fucking DVDs. I mean, honestly, the man did not. He had a gun in his pocket, but he never reached. If you got a man held on the ground with both his hands down, and you can
who's
look at the
one?
Video.
Who's this one? This is the
New
one.
New Orleans.
Is
New
this
Orleans.
The guy that had the carry permit and he went to get his license? The guy just shot him?
No, that was the other one. That was the other one.
How, I mean, it gets. I mean, it's almost comical and sad.
It is
that it's like I don't know which black person you're talking about.
This was New Orleans. He was selling DVDs, and he had a gun in his pocket, and I think he had a permit too. I don't know, but. They slammed him on the ground and they got him pinned down. Two officers, and the other officer just took out his gun and shot him in his chest four times, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong, but I know it was more. I can't watch those videos. Them videos scared the dog shit out of me because I have young black men at my house. And then you know what hurts me is when I see people online and say, well, they want number the thug, they want number this and that. But I want. Me personally, Bert, I put myself in that person's situation. I want to say this. White people, think about when next time you see a person get killed, whether you think it was right for him to get killed or not. Put yourself in that family situation. And then before you open your mouth and then think. I mean, then think. Trayvon Martin walking and get to fight with a stupid motherfucker and he shoot him.
Yeah.
I mean, police shoot a boy in Chicago who got a knife in his hand. A knife. But backing up. But or some crazy ass white dude just pull up and shoot him 14 times or 15 times. Yeah. How about the little black kid in the park with the gun? You know these motherfuckers say where he had it, he shouldn't have been playing with it. But come on, white people, yeah. You buy your kids gun too. Well, what about the black man who was just laying in the street with the autistic kid? And the police said I was gonna shoot the autistic kid. Had you shot that autistic kid, these fucking parents who got autistic kid would have fucked you up. But you decide to shoot a black man with his hands in the air. That tells you we got a racist problem. The Klans don't have hoods no more. They got fucking badges.
But not all cops.
Let me tell you something, Bert. I'm from the inner city of Atlanta. And yeah. It was an officer named Officer Smart who fed me like this officer going around on internet in Oklahoma City. I had an officer in my life like that. I don't think all officers are bad because they're not. And they're, you know, they lose their life like everybody else lose their life too. But it is some good cops out there. Officer Smart fed me. When he clocked in every day, it was me, my sister, and my brother. And he brought us food every day at the beginning of his shift, and he checked on us at the end of his shift. And he was a fucking white man.
Yeah.
So you can never put in my mind that all officers are crooked.
I'm just playing devil's advocate because we had an incident. We had an incident, an attempted break-in the other night, and I was there, and I witnessed it, and I stopped it, and my daughter's...
At your house?
Yeah, at my house. I'll tell you about it after this. But you did say the Klan doesn't wear hoods anymore. They're cops.
I think some of them are.
What
not
percentage?
All of them.
Okay. Let's do this. For the amount of cops... For the cops specifically that are killing black people, what percentage do you think are just racist... And what percentage you think are just young and scared and made a mistake?
I probably would say probably 40% of them just scared. And I say probably a good 30% of them is Klansmen, honestly. Yeah. Or if you ain't practicing, you just racist. So a Klansman and racism all go together.
Now, is there a chance that, like, and this is once again devil's advocate, but I wonder, you know, it's like I stopped hitting on my wife. I stopped hitting on Leanne.
You used to beat Leanne?
Flirting. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I used to beat Leanne. By the way, sometimes I've said things on this podcast. Like one time I guess I said I cheated on Leanne on a podcast with Danish and O'Neill. I never cheated on my wife, and I definitely wouldn't reveal it on a podcast. I wasn't listening. But I stopped flirting with her because she just started shooting me down so much. So it was almost like a Pavlovian behavior. Like I just was like, why would I flirt? I'm just going to cut to the chase. How much of it do you think are these cops working on the inner city and they just see, it's like they almost become conditioned to treat people roughly.
Black people.
Black people.
Did you see the interview with a cop locked the teacher up in Texas? I think she was in Virginia or Texas.
No.
He pulled her over. She stepped out the car and he was like, you speeding or something. And so he said, get back in the car. She got back in the car. He said, where's your license? And he yanked her out the car. Little small black lady. Ended up being a second grade teacher and slammed her. And she was like, I'm trying to get on the ground. I'm trying. And so this white dude walked over and said, I seen everything. But he didn't know what was going on. He wouldn't have never done that shit to a white woman. He wouldn't have never snatched a white woman out that fucking car, threw her on that hot concrete. And he lied. You can look at the video and look what he told his sergeant. He fucking lied. I say them types of motherfuckers are scared of black people or they racist. You ask me, two and two go together. They're racist motherfucker. And on the ride to the jail, he said, well, black people are threatening. Why are we fucking threatening? Because we strong and we probably talk loud and you all passionate and you eat your cheese sandwich. That's why you scared of us, because we'll speak our mind and you'll run off. You only tough when you got a fucking gun on you.
That is the truth, though. There is such a cultural difference in black people and white people and how we behave. Red Grant and I are friends. Mm-hmm. Red was at Montreal, and I remember me and him went to a Jack in the Box one time at Compton, and he saw the look on my face, and it was just people talking. It was like, he's like, Bert, are you okay? And I was like, I think they're going to fight. And he's like, no, she's just ordering. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, she's just ordering. Lunel, I thought Lunel used to hate me because the way Lunel talked to me was just so fucking aggressive.
But that, and I tell people, I just had that same conversation in Montreal. A lot of the white comics who was on the roast battle, they was like, why are you so mean? And I'm like, dude, this is just my personality.
It's passion. I want, you know, white people don't, White people are passionate about whatever they're passionate about, building train tracks and or whatever the fuck, white golf, you know.
Yeah.
Paddleboarding, surfing, extreme thrill sports, Facebook, like, you know, whatever white people are passionate about. Black people are passionate just in life.
Yes.
Like at a Starbucks, you will see passion come out of a black person. White people are not passionate at Starbucks.
No.
Which is odd because that's like our favorite place to go.
Yes.
But it's such a, there is such a big cultural divide in like the way we interact with people.
Each other.
Yes.
You know what it is, Bert? Black people have to know everything about white people. Y'all don't have to know a goddamn thing about black people.
Wow, that's a fucking brilliant statement.
Let me tell you, y'all don't have to come. We have to come into y'all work because 9 times out of 10, you guys give us the job. You guys are over everything. You guys are, I mean, y'all run every damn thing. Let's be honest.
I don't have to know anything about black people.
You don't.
Totally right.
You don't ever have to have a black friend and you can still be in this fucking world. We have to deal with you motherfuckers when we clock in, when we fucking go and buy
you
something.
To interact with white people.
We have to interact
with
white people.
I could theoretically do a social experiment and not speak to a black person for a month, and I think nothing would change in my life.
Nothing would change in your life. But I have to talk to white people every day. They're my agent. They're my lawyer. They're my fucking... I deal with them every day.
Bank manager.
Then bank manager. My bank manager is white. My kids' teachers are white. I mean, you... Y'all don't have to know. Y'all can go home and block black people out. We can't. We deal with y'all every fucking day. That y'all don't scare us. But I don't know why white people are so scared. I hear them all the time. Why are you yelling? I'm not fucking yelling. This is how I talk.
Yeah.
Me, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh my God, why are you talking? No, bitch, that's not me. I'm real. This is how I talk each and every fucking day.
Yeah.
And that's what's wrong because We don't know how to come together and get to know each other. What y'all black white people don't come over. You never take your kids, you know, to a black school or black event, you know, just to show them, hey, culture shit. When I go to Walmart, white babies, I had a bit about this. They stare at me and I wrote a bit say white babies are racist. And they just fucking stare. What are you looking at, white baby? Stop fucking staring at me. That's because y'all don't take your kids around other kids. Your kids just see people like them. So when they get out in the world and they see people of color that don't look like them, they was like, what the fuck is these aliens?
Oh, my daughter's the first time they ever saw black people. Like, meaning like was, I was doing, this must have been 7 years ago. I was doing Bert the Conqueror. It just started airing. And I went to Magic Johnson's Fridays on the way back from the airport. My wife picked me up with the girls. We stopped by. We're going to have lunch. Have a cocktail, head back home, take naps. I walk in, it's Sunday. I was coming off the road, and all the brothers were watching football in the bar right to the left of where you check in. One guy sees me and recognizes me, and his exact words were, but very passionate, oh shit, it's that Bert the Conqueror motherfucker, and just came over, gave me a hug. My daughters are just, they're babies. I mean, baby, you know, whatever they were, George must have been... you know, 5 or 4, maybe older, and they're just staring at this woman. And once he took a picture, all the other black guys wanted to get a picture. They didn't know who I was, but they knew I was famous. They wanted to get a picture, and they were just talking about the show. He was explaining it to them. It was a really great moment. We sit down. The manager, who's black, comes back. He says, it's an honor to have you here. I love your show. I watch your show, too. I'm going to give you guys, you know, $20 or apps for free or whatever. My wife's like, who knew that your demographic was black people? And I was like, I have no fucking idea. All my daughters thought were that when they saw black people loved their dad. They didn't know that, they didn't, because I'd never been recognized from TV. So we went through the mall over at, down in Beverly, on Beverly and 3rd, and my daughters saw black people. We're like, daddy, look. And every time they saw a black guy, they'd point to him, and I was like, girl, stop it. They're like, no. He's going to love you. But it's so true is you don't, but it's so crazy.
You got to let them interact with you.
You don't let them interact.
You don't. Like, you know, even like when you take kids out, Bert, I've said this 1,000 times, when you take kids out of the hood who never dealt with white people, they the same too. They're a little scared because you hear all of this bad shit in the hood, in a black home about white people. I grew up thinking that you guys was better than me. I've said this on every podcast. My mama told me white people are better than you. Never look them in the eye. They're the fucking devil.
Really?
That's what I was taught as a kid. So when I grew up, and when I got grown and became a comedian, I never had to deal with white people unless I was in court or I hired a lawyer. But when I became a comedian, they started to like me, and I was like, get the fuck away from me. And I went home and told my husband, I was like, why the fuck is these white women liking me? I was like, he was like, what's wrong with you? I said, they scare me. And he was like, why? And I told him the story. He's like, Pat, we all the same. And that's when I realized that we don't interact with each other. Mm-mm.
And we're not allowed to be honest. Like, that's the biggest problem I think white people have. I'm speaking for myself only right now. But I think the way that social media has taken over the landscape and the way that politics are right now with Trump, you know, the reason Trump's doing so well, the reason anyone's for that guy at all is because there is a big majority of white people in this country
that's scared that their white privilege is going to go away.
And that their
white people, we don't want your white privilege. You know what I said, Bert? I said, you know, they was like, oh, this is our country. Let's get one thing straight. White people, he did not discover this country. Your ancestors stole this fucking country.
Same, though.
Yeah, huh?
same. And we still feel like we discovered it.
Yeah,
we
ain't discovered that motherfucking thing. You came over here, gave these folks a chicken wing and some weed, and you stole this fucking country. My thing is, and then you brought black people here to do shit that you didn't want to do.
By the way, slavery was what, 300 years?
Yes.
300 fucking years. Black people were in this country. That's what blew me away from Roots. I looked at it. I want to say it was slavery was 200 years, maybe, and then black people didn't have rights for another 100 years. 100 years, you could kill a black person, and you could totally be like, well, okay. He looked at my wife.
No, you hang him. Yeah, you hung him on a tree like fucking apples.
Like Emmett Till, this is not my bit, and I really, really, really wish it was. And by the way, this is not his bit entirely either. I just heard him say it, and I could not stop thinking about it. Sherrod Small said, when that catcalling video was out, he's like, fuck that. It was only 50 years ago that we couldn't even fucking look at a white woman. This is our civil rights. Now we get to whistle at them.
Yes.
And he's like, Emmett Till, I don't know if he said this or I researched it. Emmett Till talked to a white woman,
which was the first catcaller.
He just talked to her. He said, you're beautiful or whatever. I don't know what he said. He might have just said, you guys have gum. Who knows? The story's always going to be changed to whatever white people want it to be. And he was killed. He was killed.
Excuse me. That was a kid. I think he was 14. He was
from Chicago.
A child from Chicago. And that's what I'm saying. Why, you know, like I said, this country was stolen. You brought black people here to do shit you didn't want to do. My whole thing is, why can't we just live in this stolen country together? Why has it got to be about race?
There's got to be something catalytic's got to happen. Because white people, like me and you can talk like this.
I believe if they got rid of guns, white people would be fucking more nicer.
No.
White people, because they tote guns and they're bad with guns. If you got rid of guns, you will have to interact. You will have to be nice.
Do you want me to tell you why? I'm gonna tell you the white opinion.
Okay, give me the white opinion.
The white opinion is, okay, we'll turn our guns in, but the black people are never going to turn their guns in, and so then the black people will be armed and we won't have any guns.
That's not true. Take them for everybody. We was in Canada. Then you feel safe in Canada.
There's no black people in Canada. There's no one in Canada.
Who the fuck? I saw a lot of black people. What the hell are you talking about?
Those are African black people.
I don't give a fuck.
Hello.
We the mixed black people. We mixed with, if you do some ancestor work, you're probably my first cousin, Bert.
No, listen. The black people that have guns in this country are not like the white people. Like Mike Calta, my buddy in Tampa, is the stereotype for what everyone hates with gun owners. He's got like four AR-5, 15s or whatever. He's got handguns out the ass. He's got more guns than anyone. But they're all registered. He does, like, you know, he's licensed. In the projects, in the hood.
Don't say the projects. Ain't no more projects. It's called a hood.
In the hood.
Inner city.
Like, if they said, all right, here's the deal. Everyone needs to turn in their guns. We're getting rid of guns. How many black people that have guns in the hood?
How many white people going to turn them in? I don't think nobody would turn them in.
The same number that'll turn them in?
Yeah, I don't think neither side would turn them in. I mean, my personal thing, I always tell people, it's not about taking your guns.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love for this country not to have guns and we just whoop each other ass.
Yeah.
That'll be so much better. But, you know, my
whole
thing.
They're fun.
I only shot my kid's father, so I don't really know a lot about guns. That was a 22. My thing is, you know, like, but do you agree, Bert, that we need gun control?
Oh, these kids 100%.
Walk in this school and they shoot people, and they that boy who shot them first grader broke my heart.
The kid in Sandy Hook?
Yes, and now one of those kids was black. I didn't give a fuck, but I can't imagine getting a phone call and tell me that my baby been split in half by a motherfucking automatic weapon.
Oh, I don't think we need this. Whatever the hell.
Yeah,
right
why
now.
Do we need a gun? Why do you need a gun that'll shoot 100 times?
Right now, every gun owner is going, it was a semi-automatic weapon. Because they're, I guess they...
They have an excuse, yeah. Why do we need a gun that'll shoot 100 times?
I don't know.
What's wrong with shooting 8 times? If you didn't hit that motherfucker, then you need to be killed.
If I feel like... Okay, once again, devil's advocate. Touching a gun is kind of sexy. Like when you grab a gun.
So it's touching a titty, but a titty don't kill you.
Okay, so we trade in guns for titties?
Not my titties. I'm not saying get rid of gun. I'm saying we need a little bit more gun control.
I agree with gun control.
We got to keep them out of crazy people's hands.
Let me tell you something. I don't own a gun. I don't care to own a gun. I could own a gun if I wanted to. I have the money. I have the time. I could go in, get the license. I could do all that if I want. But I just don't really give a fuck. I really don't. But I do have a taser. Spray.
I got a bat.
Yeah, I got a baton. I got a slapjack. I got a hot pepper spray.
Yeah.
I got everything that for self-protection. And when some lady tried to break into our house.
A lady?
Yeah, it was a lady. Mexican lady. I don't know why I had to say she was Mexican, but she was.
What make you think she was trying to break in?
So I'm sitting out. We get done dinner at my sister's house, like 8:30 at night. We come home. I'm a little buzzed. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have a cigar. And Leanne's like... There's no room in the back. There's salt torn up. So I go, all right. So I sit in that little corner seat. I don't know if you saw that little blue seat. I sit over there by the bushes. I light a cigar. I'm smoking a cigar. Chick rolls up in between our car and the dumpster and starts looking around. And then creeps by our dumpster, starts looking around, starts going to our back fence to look over our fence. And I go, can I help you? And she goes, and like panics. Now, Priscilla, our dog, goes after her, but she's behind a gate and kind of scares the chick a lot. And she's like, I'm here for the neighborhood committee to bring some bullshit excuse. And I said, no. I saw what you were doing. And she goes, no, I was just looking for your front door. And I said, no, you're scoping out my house. I get it. And I said, you need to fucking leave. And she's like, no, I'm here for them. Got angry with me. And I went, fuck you. I go, I wasn't born yesterday. I saw what you were doing. You need to fucking leave. And then she goes to like reach out to Pris, and Pris lunges at her hand. And she goes, I said, and as a matter of fact, you know what? Go home. It's 8:30 at night. It's completely dark out. Now is not the time to go door to door and ask for money. I go, that's home invasion hours, in my opinion, is when you knock on someone's door at 8:30 at night, you're checking to see if anyone's home. You're going to, yeah, that's what you're doing. So I call the cops. I go out. I stand in the street and I watch her start going from door to door. And she just goes, you don't need to watch me. And I was like, sure. And then my neighbor comes out and he goes, she's knocking on your door. I go, yeah. And he goes, yeah, she knocked on my door, but she tapped really lightly to see if anyone was home. And it was like, he was weird. And he goes, and I saw her looking over my fence. So Leanne comes out. We got an app for our neighborhood. Leanne comes out. She goes, in this app, it's like a Facebook wall page type thing. She goes, people have been reporting bikes stolen and a Mexican chick knocking on their door.
What?
Yeah, and so cops show up, and by the way, I have to say this, but very timely. They show up very quickly.
Of course. It's like, a white neighborhood.
Like 8 minutes.
By the way,
can I tell you this?
What?
A helicopter flew over our house. A cop helicopter spotlight takes off. Cops pull up 8 minutes later. How you doing, sir? By the way, I'm drunk. Not that that matters at this point, but I am buzzed. Is everything okay, sir? I said, no. Then I tell them exactly what happened. My daughters are now standing at that fence. Both in like their shirts, getting ready to go to bed, holding their little stuffed animals, and they're looking over there. All right, we're going to go look for her. Drive up and down our street, take a lap, come back, and they're like, listen, she probably hopped onto a major street close by and took off. But what you're describing is what is going on right now in this neighborhood. They'll knock on your door. Sometimes what they'll try to do is distract you as someone hops over your back fence and steals your shit, or they'll go in and they're looking to see if you got anything. They said, she said, we saw, she probably saw the dumpster and thought there would be tools laying out. And if there were tools, she'd just try to get on the fence, grab them, and walk, run off real discreetly. And he said, you know, but you talking to her probably, and the fact that you have a 130-pound dog, is, I don't think she's coming back. And I was like, cool. And he's like, you know, but there's been some robberies. So I go, hey, listen, man. My girls are a little spooked. They've never had anything like this happen. Is it okay if they come down and you guys just let them know that, you know, just say you'll be doing laps around the neighborhood? And they were like, sure. So the girls come down, George and Isla. First thing Isla says is, do you get paid a lot of money? Like, fucking Isla, what the fuck? And the guy goes, oh, we make a very decent living, enough to support our families. And she's like, did you guys catch her? And they're like, no. And they talk to the girl, like, listen, girls, we're going to be doing laps around this neighborhood. No one's breaking into your house. I live like 3 blocks over that way. I'll be watching this whole neighborhood. You're going to be totally fine. I'll tell you what, I'll do a lap every hour and drive by. And the girls are like, thank you. And then I go, hey, gentlemen, thank you very much. Start walking into the house. And Georgia looks at me. She goes, Dad, we are wearing marijuana shirts. They were wearing shirts from – one was wearing shirts from a dispensary, and one was wearing a shirt from a company called The Dope State. And it's a marijuana leaf, and it says – instead of the North Face, it says The Dope State. Uh-huh. And they're, it's a badass fucking shirt, by the way. Go to them. They're doing Ali Sadiq's shirt, Mexicans Got On Boots. And – I could not stop fucking laughing. And I was like, wait, how do you know what marijuana is? She goes, Mom told me about it the other day because it came up with friends.
You got the realest wife ever.
It was so fucking funny. But in those moments where, let's just call it this. When the streets meet your front door.
Yes.
When someone tries to assault you or take your property,
yes,
Donald Trump's rhetoric plugs in so perfectly. It literally, he's pitching to people who are scared. People are genuinely fucking scared.
People are genuinely
and he's
scared.
Saying,
well, for what? What are they scared for? Are they scared because they had to take off their hood and say that they support Donald Trump?
I think white people are scared.
I mean, why? Let me ask you something.
What?
Why am I not scared? I live in a fucking nice house too. I got nice stuff. Why am I not scared?
Same reason Leanne's not scared. Because you got yourself to there. Leanne got herself to here. Leanne was like, oh, honey, I guarantee you there have been people in our backyard. I guarantee you. Don't ever think people haven't tried to break into our house before.
Yeah.
She's like, that's it. But me, I did not get myself to here. I had a parallel move on this white privilege train to get here.
Thank you for saying you had a white privilege train.
Oh.
People, white people, y'all privileges are so wonderful. You ever seen a white man walk in front of your car and never look at you? Like, you better not hit me because I got asses in the refrigerator.
That's a white chick move, too. Is second the walk sign, they just start walking. You go, whoa, what the fuck? You're not worried about getting hit by a car? But my life has been very easy.
Yes.
I don't ever interact with I go in to talk to a studio or a network, and I look at the guys there
as guys
I would play golf with.
Mm-hmm.
Or like guys that would have been in my fraternity.
But I go to studios and there's people, I mean, now that I live in a mostly white neighborhood, I mean, they would be the people that would be in the Walmart. I used to be very intimidated by white people because, you know, you know that they get they got better education. They got a better chance at
white people get better education.
Yeah.
White people get better education because, like, I look at this.
That y'all,
like,
care about the communities too, but we care about our community too, but they just dump bullshit in our community. They take from our community, but white people communities, they don't take from.
I don't know what you think about this, but I think the busing program was probably one of the better programs.
White people hated that program.
Well, yeah, because
they kids had to go to school with people who was less fortunate than them. Same thing with healthcare. People don't want people to have healthcare because, be honest, some people don't want to sit in the emergency room with somebody with lower standards than them.
No, it's, you know what it is? It's that, that might be it. But, like, I remember when I went to a mostly black basketball camp, and, like, I remember a black kid just looking at me, and I remember him staring at me and going, like sizing me up. He was a little bit my age. He was like, I like your hat. Can I wear it? And I was like, sure. And then I just gave it to him, and then I never saw the hat again. And I was like, did he steal it? No, he didn't steal it because I gave it to him. But he just looked at me, and he was like, this motherfucker doesn't know anything.
A pussy.
Yeah, he's a pussy. And and that is why white people objected to the black busing, is because they were afraid that these kids who had to fight for everything. Like, you ever see those videos of the kids? Like, there was one black kid from Puff Daddy put it on his Snapchat the other day. This kid, he's from Jamaica, and he goes, "Me work for everything." The kid's maybe 5 years old. "Me work for everything I got."
They passing him around a lot.
Yeah.
I
work for everything I got. You give me a chance. I work the hardest I can. You're like, you cut to a white kid, and it's like, sparkling, like, what is that? Remember that Sparkling Wiggles?
Yes.
It's like, it's just goofiness. It's nothing like, because me work for everything I got.
Yeah, because, you know, like, white people like giving their kids everything. My son is 14 years old. And let me just say this. My son do not have to work. Me and my husband, we're doing really well. But yeah. I told my kids, you live in this big-ass house. You got fucking nice foam. You got nice shit. You don't want a need for anything. I said, at least you can do is learn how to take care of yourself in this world. Go get a fucking job. My son been working at Chick-fil-A since he was 14. He's 16 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I make him save his money. If he bought his own video game. I tell him, I say, I don't want you spending all of your money. I would go half with you because I am still responsible for you.
Yeah.
But look at the work ethic that I'm trying to instill in my kid. Those kids in my neighborhood, they work at Chick-fil-A. They're like, I don't need this shit. I quit. So they can't even keep enough kids because the community is mostly white. But I think when you instill in your kids that you're not going to hand them everything, I think they become better people. Make them get a job so they can be around other people.
It's amazing. It really glares when you watch, like, Georgia plays softball against, like, these all-Mexican teams.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just that they're all Mexican. You can tell that they're from a different area. They're, like, more further out in Van Nuys. And, man, the coaches push those girls so much harder than our coaches push. Our coaches are like, you know what? You struck out. It's okay.
No. They do that shit in my community. And that's why our football teams suck. My older kids come from a school where shit, they came out to rap music. And football was everything. I mean, it was a middle class black neighborhood. Wasn't nobody trying to make it out the hood. But they took it serious. If you holler at your kids on my son's football team, you, the police officer, will come up and say, let me speak to you. And I'm like, you're making them pussy. Because when they get in the real world and somebody holler and scream at them and they can't just stomp away and say, oh my God, you make me sick, mother. No.
Yeah.
They're pussies. They're a bunch of kids in my community are straight. They talk back to their parents.
Oh.
I wish a motherfucker would talk back to me. I had to get on my son. I said, we need to get one thing straight, boy. You are not white. You would get fucked up.
Yeah.
And even his friends was come over my house, which is all white little kids, and take their shirt off and throw their feet on my sofa. And I'm like, nigga, no, put your motherfucking shirt on. And you're looking like a snowman. I just had an incident where my son was caught smoking weed. And when I tell you these parents was in denial, I went through my son's phone to find out he was smoking weed. Make a long story short, he had a video of a little naked white girl on there. And I told him, I said, that's your first problem, having a fucking white pussy underage on your phone. But she was in the same grade he was, but she gave it to one boy.
They passed it around. Fucking
so I called
shit.
All the goddamn parents, Bert, and I said, y'all need to come to my goddamn house because all son is getting, all kids are getting high. I caught my son smoking weed, and they're drinking alcohol. Parents come over there, they deny, oh, not my child. Not. I said, yes. And look, the little video, I put it up on my Chromecast, and I asked the parents, I said, who white baby pussy this is? Because y'all need to tell her fucking mama she's sending out video digging in her pussy wrong.
Let me
tell you something. They damn near turned pink. They felt like I was inappropriate for the way I showed them the video.
No.
Fuck that shit. I'm gonna keep it real. Who baby white baby pussy this year? I beat the dog shit out of my son. But I bet you now one of them white kids got high. I mean got a whooping. And I also told my son, this is how drugs start. Burke, I live in a white community. You know what our biggest problem is?
What?
Heroin. It's fucking heroin. And I get notes all the time about heroin at the school, kids overdosing, kids dying. But this is the shit they don't talk about with the white community. I don't go to the heroin meeting because my kids are fat. We don't have a heroin problem. We got cheeseburger problem.
Yeah.
But we got heroin. And yeah. I told him, I said, what's next, son? It's going to be weed. It's going to be alcohol. The next thing you know, your friend's going to tell you to shoot dope. Nigga, I beat the shit out of his ass. And I made him sleep in the bed with me and my husband for 2 weeks.
That's fucking great.
And I'd have told him, you ain't got no friends. Motherfucker, you go to work, you go to school, you play football, I'll fuck you up. I said, I will fuck your friends up.
Yeah.
And I told the parents, I said, keep your motherfucking children away from my son. And I'm not saying my son gave it to you, your son. And I'm not saying your son gave it. Well, we're going to break this shit up today.
Yeah.
And I broke that shit up. And they wouldn't even speak to my son. To my, your mom is a snitch. I said, I don't give a fuck. Next time, I'm going to take a belt to their motherfucking ass. Smoke another joint around my house. I'm going to fuck all you white babies up.
It's when you're black, you're almost held to a different standard.
You are fucking held to a different standard. What if they was out riding and they got pulled over by the police? They would have shot him first. Like, there was ringing a doorbell in my neighborhood running off. And people on, we have a Facebook page. So people on my Facebook, on the Facebook were going out, ringing the bell. And people was like, I ain't having that shit. You know, these gun-toed crazy people. I said, let me tell you something, motherfucker.
You cannot do that anymore. What did you guys call it growing up? When you ring a doorbell and run away.
I don't know. We never did that shit.
We used to do it.
I'm black. We ain't no doorbells. You knocked on the motherfucker door.
Yeah.
But when he did that shit, I said, son, you the fattest one in this group. You the darkest one. And you're going to be the first motherfucker to get shot.
Hell yeah.
I shot that shit down because they were hang up at the little park.
Let me tell you something. If I'm being dead serious. If a group of kids come up to my door and knock and I see them running, I'm calling the cops. Because I'm fucking scared. If it's 9 at night, and they come up and they sneak up to my door and knock and run away. I'm like, home invasion. I don't give a fuck what color they are.
Yeah.
Home invasion.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if I had a gun, I'd definitely have it out. I'd have it out.
And that's how people shoot kids.
I
told my son, I said, son, you don't understand what's going on in this world. You don't have it like your white friends do.
And he doesn't have it. Let me tell you, I'm not saying that I would be like this, but I know there are men that would be like this. If you were brought to school and you were like, listen, Trayvon Martin, I'm just using a black name.
Okay.
Trayvon Martin was arrested today at our school for marijuana, and he had pictures of your daughter naked on his phone. That's very, very, very different as a parent to, listen, Russell Matthews, you know his parents. You guys play at the country club together.
Mm-hmm.
He was arrested for marijuana. Mm-hmm. He had naked pictures of your daughter. You're like, okay. It just sounds different to a white father.
Of course it does.
It sounds different to a white father. I'm not saying it does to me, but I'm saying I know fathers who would see that very different. And
you know what they would have said? Trayvon Martin was a thug.
Yep.
That's the boy on the swim team. Look how they take up for the boy on the swim team. Raped the girl.
Yeah.
And these son of a bitches out here, if he was black, they'd be like, hang that nigga. But he's a rich white kid. And he just got out of jail earlier. He's getting out of jail early. That's all black people say. Treat us fairly. When you date rape them, you got an old ass Bill Cosby going to jail for date rape.
Yeah.
I mean, why aren't this fucking kid? Look at the kid for the affluential or whatever that fucking word. I never heard that word.
Oh,
killed them four people, and you gave him another fucking
chance. In Texas,
chain.
He got diagnosed by a psychiatrist as having
He don't know what it is to be poor. But you ended four lives on your fucking stupidity. If you was a black child, you'd have got 50 years and been home. That's the bullshit that gets me. But that's the shit that make our society say, oh, white kids, you can keep fucking up. We're going to keep giving you chances.
Well, you know, when I did jury duty, and I saw, and my dad's a very, when I say very liberal, my dad is like beyond liberal. He's very fair, but he's very honest. Like when Anthony Cumia,
the radio host.
Yeah, got beat up by that black chick. And then went on a tirade. My dad's like, and then he's coming up and on his feed, and he's like, we've got to be honest with ourselves. Black people have a problem with violence in America.
That's not true.
And my dad goes, that's not true. He goes, no, it has nothing to do with your skin color. He goes, poor people have a problem with violence.
Yes,
he goes, it's a socioeconomic problem. He goes, across the board, if you earn lower than $15,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and you're living in one of these cities where everything's expensive as shit, frustration is your natural go-to.
Yes.
And it's so much harder to live in that life and not be violent. And that's my dad is that person. So when you say, like, I went to do jury duty, and I was trying to write jokes, and you're looking at everything, and you pick up on something, and I just noticed a plethora that is a very white word, but a plethora of young black men walking in and out of that courtroom.
All day.
I mean, just one after another, after another, after another. And I'm doing what I think anyone else would do is going, I wonder what he did.
Yeah.
And that, as opposed to saying, I wonder what he's accused of. I wonder what I'm saying, I wonder what he did. Like, I've already counted him guilty. And I call my dad. I go, the other thing I noticed is that there aren't a lot of black people serving jury duty. It's all Asians and whites. That's it.
Because we don't go. They say most of us is convicted felon.
And then my dad's like, well, that's the problem with the vote. When Puff Daddy came out and said black people need to go out and vote or die. And he goes, that's the problem. They're not registered voters. So if they're not registered voters, they're not going to be able to do jury duty. And he said,
They don't want to be jury duty. They don't want to sit there for that fucking $75.
And so he said, my dad said, you know, I'm glad you said that, but take a second and think how confusing that must be to a young black kid to have all these white people saying words you don't know, like adjudication and deferred sentence and all these things that sound promising, but basically they're just trying to get you through the system.
Mm-hmm.
They're just basically saying, I don't want to take a long time and fight this case. I can get you a whatever ... My dad is a lawyer, so he's like, that's the problem with our justice system, is that
they set them up.
These kids don't have a chance.
They don't have a chance when you're black.
And he's like, and sometimes, Bert, it's for shit that you would have gotten
nothing
arrested for, but because you're white, a white cop would just go, listen,
I'm going to let you off.
Don't do it again. Because that cop sees his son in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same thing when Barack Obama goes, if I had a son, that could have been Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
Well, the cops let a white kid go because they're like, listen, you just fucked up. We all smoked weed. Get the fuck out of here. Black kid doesn't. Like, well, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
I'm going to choke you out. I'm going to beat the shit out. I'll tell you an incident. My son went to court one time and he was speeding when he first started driving. And so his license gets suspended. I mean, he had tickets to pay. He didn't pay them on time, so we had to go to court. So we go to court, Bert, in my white neighborhood. And it was full of black people and Mexican, a few white people here and there. And I started to look around and I was like, wow. And I hit my son as each black kid or Mexican kid and a few white kids go. It was mostly black. Each one of them, the judge said, why don't you have a job? And why don't you have a job? And each one of them said, I'm a convicted felon. I cannot find a job. And me being a black parent sitting there knowing what I've been through in life, that shit cracked my heart open.
Yeah.
My son is not a convicted felon. And I finally looked over at my son. I said, do you see the bullshit that I fight every day to keep you from going through? I said, every one of them motherfuckers went up there and they was a convicted felon. And if 10 of them went up there, 7 of them had no job. No job, Bert, and most of them were still in at our local mall. So I told my son, I said, this is the bullshit I don't ever want you to have to go through. They called my son's name because he had 2 traffic tickets. The judge was so frustrated at this time. He's an old white judge. He said, so you a convicted felon too? And I said, hell no, Your Honor. Not my son. And he got a job. I said, and I pay his tickets, but he get paid on Friday. And he said, you know what, ma'am? We'll give him 2 weeks to pay his ticket. But that opened my mind so much because I was once that person who went up in front of a white man and who was a convicted felon, who looked down on me and don't know where the fuck I came from in life and gave me a year in jail.
Yeah.
You know, but I work my ass out to keep my kids from going through that. I tell my kids all the time, I say, you can fix your credit 1,000 times, but you fuck up your background, they're going to put dirt in your face and probably drop your criminal background history in the grave with your ass.
Oh, it's not, I think of all the shit I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, if I had gotten caught, that would have fucked my life up forever.
No, when you're white, you're right.
No, I look at like Joey Diaz can't get into Canada because he served time in a federal prison for kidnapping or whatever. And so they won't. I mean, you can do stuff to get
it. But Joey Diaz is not white.
Joey Diaz is not white.
Yes.
He's
you got a kid on the Stanford swim team who just, you know, who I'm not saying all white people don't get a break. But when you got money and you white,
wealthy white people get a break.
Let me tell you how crazy this country is. Malia Obama just was on a video this week twerking. Not really twerking nasty. These people said the most craziest shit about her. But you take the Bush kids who was on drugs, who did alcohol, and they was angels.
They're working at Good Morning America now, I think.
Yeah, one on work at Good Morning America. And all this girl was doing, she graduated, she going to Harvard. She just went to a concert and she was twerking. And they're saying, bitch look like a monkey, baboon. I was like, people, what is wrong with y'all?
Oh,
that's how unfair. A white woman said Malia Obama. They complain about Michelle Obama arms, but say that Donald Trump's wife is sexy, butt naked, butt ass naked.
Donald
First
Trump's
of all,
wife
this
is very
how
sexy.
Racist this country is.
They're,
you
she's
hate
very sexy.
Yeah, she
she's
is
very
but,
sexy.
But if so is Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
If she got naked like that, you motherfuckers, white people go goddamn crazy.
Oh,
If Obama said half the shit Donald Trump said, they would shoot.
They would have shot him so quick. The joke I told up in Montreal was, I'm voting for Trump just because I want to see an assassination. They're going to kill him. There's no way he's not. You know his family had to have said to him, they're going to kill you. They're going to shoot you once you get part. There's no way you're going to make it out alive. Like,
who, Trump?
Trump. There's no way Trump's
going to
make it out alive.
I mean, I can't. You know, my thing is, if Obama said the shit that Trump said, I would have never supported him.
Can I tell you the most racist thing in the world right now?
What?
I didn't know Barack Obama's daughter's names.
Malia.
When you said Malia, I was like, "Don't." By the way, I will
That's
guess.
That's not racist.
I knew Chelsea Clinton. I knew Jenna Bush and Jemma.
I didn't know the Bush daughter's name.
I knew the Bush daughters, but I didn't know.
I know Chelsea because
Malia, and then what's the other one's name? Don't tell me.
I don't know it.
Oh, you don't know it?
So you're not racist.
Okay, good.
I just call them Obama daughters.
One of the things that during the George Zimmerman trial with Trayvon Martin.
Yeah.
One of the things that really caught me off guard one day was the mom. You know, it's interesting. I'm not speaking for all white people. I'm speaking for me, but I know that there are white people that feel the way I do. White people, I'm saying white people just so I don't sound like I'm saying it and I'm a fucking horrible person.
Okay.
But white people have a hard time connecting with the family aspect when they see the mom shouting and screaming. Like the woman whose boyfriend got shot and she videotaped it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was such, I watched that video and I was like, she was saying such fucked up things. Like it was almost like it was almost like there was a part of me that was like, is she excited that he got shot and she got it on tape? Like she was like, oh, he's dying. You just shot him. He's dying. I'm like, I would never say that in a car with somebody. I would just never say that. But there was a moment in the Trayvon Martin thing when I saw the mom as a parent. And I realized for the first time in this whole fucking trial, oh, that's just her son. Oh, shit. Like, I'm looking at this as a politicized thing. You know, the right takes it and turns it into a marketing campaign for liberals against conservatives. But I just saw it and I was like, oh, that he's just a little boy. Like, he's just a kid.
Yeah, he was a kid.
He had a growth spurt.
Yeah, he had a growth spurt. He smoked weed. But do that give you a right to kill him?
It does
and
not
I
give
tell
you a right
people,
to kill him.
If you would take just a moment when a black man is killed and just put yourself in that situation, would you want to be treated like that? I'm going to say that, and I know we got to wrap it up, but Bert, I was out one day putting rocks in. This is how crazy this country is. I was out putting rocks in front of my yard. I live in a nice neighborhood. I'm the only black family. You got a mix, but we the only regular black family.
Yeah.
So this U.S. Marshal pulled up to my yard, which he lives there. I knew who he was. And he was like, hey, Miss Pat, where you get the rocks from? My fucking neighbor was so concerned with me, two doors down. He ran up there, another white dude, and said, yo, dude, what the fuck you doing fucking with Miss Pat? And he was like, I'm just asking her about her rocks. But it fucked him up so much because black people has been getting killed.
Yeah.
He want to know why the fuck a U.S. Marshal pull up to my house.
Yeah.
And he's like, when the guy was like, I live down the street, sir. I just asking her about the rocks. And he was like, oh, Miss Pat, I just want to make sure you was okay. So I'm not saying all white people don't give a fuck about us getting killed. Some do. But at that moment, it made me think like, wow. This is fucked up. He actually thought that this man pulled up to fuck with us because we was black.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm very sensitive to it. But I'm sensitive to it because I can hear both sides of the fence, but I know what side of the fence I'm on. I'm on the right side.
It's scary being black in this country right now for women and men. I'm telling you, Bert, I'm scared. I'm so scared. And I mean, I support the police. When that Dallas shit happened, my thing was, dude, don't go shoot. Them police has got to go home to their family, too. If you that upset, you should have shot the person who upset at you. Don't go shoot five officers that didn't have shit to do with.
Just
and there were probably five fucking
control.
Good officers. Yep. I don't believe in that. I don't believe for tick for tat. We got to get along in this motherfucking country. But, I mean,
what's the answer, then?
If I had the answer, I'd be rich.
You know what the answer is? These conversations that we're having right now.
Yeah, but...
Because at the end of this, you know I'm going to give you a hug and that I have nothing but love for you and you have nothing but love for me.
I have nothing but love for you.
But there's so many people that just don't want to talk about it. Just
don't
want to
talk about race. They
don't want to hear about it.
They don't want to hear about it. That's right. And you should talk about it. And you should go. I mean, I have people that's friend. I tell people all the time, they badger me. Oh, Ms. Pat, you're a Democrat. Why? And I wrote a thing on my Twitter. I said, look, I'm a Democrat. And I respect you being a Republican, but it doesn't mean we cannot love each other.
Yeah.
And people's like, that is the realest shit I ever heard. Because they try to convert you. You're not going to convert me. No. And I'm not going to try to convert you. You feel the way, but don't hate nobody.
Yeah.
Why can't we come all together and love each other? But like we said earlier, there's so many white people that fear black people that's never had a black friend that only see what the media say. Like I tell people when I'm on stage, all white men don't kill their wife. All black people don't kill. All black people don't steal. All Mexicans don't cut their wife throat. All white men are not
You can't say all. You can't say all.
That's what happened to Anthony when he said all black women. I'm like, dude, I didn't hit you. I didn't fucking hit you.
Yeah.
But I felt like you was talking to me. That's why we carry a gun. That's why we shoot them. No, motherfucker, what you going to shoot me for? I live in Indianapolis. I'm not the black bitch that hit you up under that bridge.
That's the statement that you need to that's the statement you need to work on in your stand up. Is that's a really brilliant statement. When people say something racist, you go, hey, I didn't do that, and I'm empathizing with you, but when you say that, I feel like you're talking to me.
You are. He was talking to me up on that bridge. The black bitch hit me. Oh, they all crazy. No, and I watched it, and I was like, Anthony Cummings, I don't know you. I never hit you. Don't say all.
You can't say y'all. You can't say
don't
all.
Don't say all and y'all, because all and y'all are here. Whoever hit you, now you should have said, that black bitch hit me.
Yeah,
I wouldn't hit you.
What if we did a program in America where you paired up black families and white families, and once a month they had to do dinner together, and you just had to do dinner
especially ones that don't have that would never cross each other path.
You force them to go and spend time with each other and just get to know each other, so that I'm being serious when I say this, my friendship with Red and Donnell really opened my eyes to everything. I remember Red said to this day, he goes, I made an observation. We played golf and I said, black guys don't have a problem talking shit on the course. It's very part of the culture is to almost trash talk.
Any court.
You do not talk on a golf course. You could line up to putt and be like, and they'd fucking get in your head. And you're like, that does not happen in white golf courses. You don't speak. And black guys are so much better putters because of it. Because they literally line up putts and just, they're fucking got all the shit going on their head. They almost got shot by the cops driving to the course. Black guys putt so much better than white people. It's amazing. That's another stereotype.
Well, that's why we know we had Tiger Woods then.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Well,
they're getting into golf too.
What do you? What? And you got anything to promote?
No. Just
what date
a couple,
you got coming out?
I'm in. Peoria, Illinois next week.
Okay.
So I'm there at Jukebox.
I'm posting this tonight. I'll be posting this right now.
Okay.
And
so
then
I'm at Jukebox, and I'm just here. I'm just working on some studio stuff here. And you can go to MissPatComedy.com and see all my dates and stuff.
Get on her Periscope.
Yeah, I need to start Periscope.
No, I was. You know what is really good is the Facebook Live.
I haven't done Facebook Live yet.
Live's good. You doing Snapchat?
I do a little Snapchat.
I think I follow you on Snapchat too.
Yeah, I follow you too.
And go out to her show and just hang out with her.
Yeah, just hang out with me. And I don't give a fuck what your views is in life. When you come to me, we family. I don't give a fuck if you go cook people feet at the end of the day. Just don't take my fucking feet. When it's all said and done, it's all if we just learn to love each other. I mean, if we would learn to love each other, a lot of this bad shit that happened years ago, it'll start to ease some of the pain on both sides.
Yeah.
We got to start learning to love each other. And that's what's wrong with the world. Nobody gives a fuck about each other anymore. I mean, if you listening, when you get a chance, if you white, go and just hug somebody black. If you black, just go hug somebody white.
You're
going
to get so many white guys beat up just walking up to fucking Terrell Suggs. Hey, man, just what the fuck? Like, black guys do not like to be touched.
No, just say, man, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you don't want to say, I appreciate you.
Post a video, guys. Go, hey, man, just this is a new viral video campaign we got. It's called Hug a Black Person.
Yeah.
You go up, you videotape it, you say, hey, introduce yourself. My name's Bert Kreischer, and I think the way to get through in America is for us to love each other, and I'd like to give you a hug.
That's right.
And post that video, and I will retweet it, I will repost it,
yes.
and we'll call it, what, Hug a Black Person?
Yeah.
Hashtag Hug a Black Person campaign. Hug a black person. Yeah. Miss Pat came up with it. I'm promoting it. Hug a black person.
So we can get through this bullshit.
Yeah.
So we can get through this bullshit.
I love it. I love you, Miss Pat.
Too. I love you too, buddy.
I wish Leanne could come back here. I think the girls came back. She was like, are we three doing a podcast? And I was like, yeah. And then I think she got caught up in shit.
Well, the writer, I'm working with a writer, so she's out front. I need to go get her. She's black.
Okay,
so
let's
go. So she probably done got a tan.
What do you think of the renovation so far?
I think it's awesome. I did my house. Oh, I can't wait till you invite me over for dinner.
Oh, fuck yeah. That'll be the first of that new show.
Yeah.
Black people and white people eating dinner together.
Yeah, and you bring your dish and we do all this.
Pass the scissor up.
Scissor. It's got to have ancient mama on it. We don't fuck with
dinner.
It. Yeah, you got to have ancient mama on it or we don't fuck with it.
I love you, Miss Pat.
I love you too, Bert.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.